Welcome into another edition of American Ag Today, produced by the American Ag Network. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. While traders are mostly expecting today's quarterly grain stocks report to be positive to the corn market, however, the numbers tend to be a bit more elusive in years with corn quality problems. Last fall's corn harvest is a good example of a problem year. Iowa, the number one corn-producing state in the nation, had a twofold issue. First, there was the drought in the western part of the state. It is typically the most productive corn area in Iowa. Then the winds blew in eastern Iowa. The derecho devastated a huge area. Consequently, Iowa has a corn quality issue, and North Dakota State's Frayne Olson explains that's a problem for USDA when it counts grain stocks.
So USDA has a much more difficult time in years where we have a corn quality problem to make sure we have the right number. And of course, once you run it across the scale, if you have a test weight problem, most farmers report their inventories based off, you know, the bushels in a bin and may not always adjust for the quality attributes like a test weight or a moisture adjustment.
Here's how that works in the real world when USDA surveys farmers about how much corn they have in storage, according to the NDSU Extension Agricultural Economist.
You know, when you answer your survey, you write it down as 12,000, but it might be something a little less than that by the time you take it out and you run it across a scale. And so, you know, when we're talking, you know, 5+ billion bushels of corn going into the livestock sector, you know, you start taking a couple percent here and a couple percent there for test weight adjustments and or moisture adjustments. And, you know, that adds up to some big bushels.
Now, USDA may have already made some adjustments for these issues. For instance, it reduced the national corn yield in January and grain stocks fell. It could be that traders expecting corn disappearance in the last quarter to follow what appeared to be big livestock demand for feed might be surprised by today's figure. Canadian Pacific Railway Limited has agreed to buy Kansas City Southern for $25 billion and create a 20,000-mile network that would link the U.S., Mexico, and Canada through a single rail line. If the deal is approved by the U.S. Surface and Transportation Board, the combined company will be headquartered in Calgary, operating under the name Canadian Pacific Kansas City. The deal would create a rail network extending across Canada from Vancouver to New Brunswick and through the U.S. Midwestern network to Gulf of Mexico ports and deep into Mexico down to Mexico City. A joint company statement said that the two rail companies decided the timing of the deal was right in light of the new three-way USMCA trade deal that replaced the old NAFTA pact. Howard Green, a former journalist, railway analyst, and author of the book Railroader, believes the deal has a good chance of being approved by government regulators.
This deal has an air of inevitability to it. The choice of companies, CP is the smallest in Canada, KCS is the smallest of the five class ones in the United States, and probably the most likely to meet with the approval of regulators. I think the other interesting point here is that it's a friendly deal, or appears to be a friendly deal.
The transaction would be the biggest Canadian purchase of a U.S. asset since Enbridge finalized its deal for Spectra Energy in early 2017. A North America-wide rail line network headquartered in Calgary would be good news for Alberta's hard-hit oil industry, but the joint company statement highlighted the environmental points of the deal, saying the new single-line routes will cut emissions, as rail is four times more fuel-efficient than trucking.
Climate change is front and center in this release. You know, one train is equivalent of 300 trucks. Trucks are bigger emitters. And the fact that this kind of arrangement, if it goes through, could be a big help to Western oil producers getting their product to market in the absence of new pipelines, a line right down to the Gulf of Mexico.
Canadian Pacific will file the merger application with the U.S. Surface and Transportation Board and begin the process of creating a trust that will hold Kansas City Southern shares while approval is pending. Agricultural debt at commercial banks eased further at the end of 2020, and loan repayment problems moderated slightly, according to the Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank. Research by the KC Fed released this last week shows general improvement in the agricultural economy likely drove the pullback in farm lending activity and strengthened credit conditions. Higher crop prices and an influx of government payments in 2020 also contributed to stronger growth in deposits, which supported a sharp increase in liquidity at agricultural banks. Agricultural loan balances at commercial banks reached a five-year low in the fourth quarter and continued to shift toward farm real estate. Although the accumulation of farm debt remained higher than the average of the past 10 years, the total value of farm loan portfolios fell 5% from the previous year. Moving forward, the research says the pace of lending to farmers may remain slower than in previous years, as 2020 government payments and recent strength in crop prices have improved borrower liquidity and farm balance sheets. The Environmental Protection Agency extended the compliance deadline for refiners to meet their renewable volume obligations. EPA is extending the RFS compliance deadline for the 2019 compliance year and submission of reports for the 2019 compliance year for small refineries. The new deadlines are November 30th of 2021 and June 1st of 2022. EPA is also extending the RFS compliance deadline for the 2020 and the associated deadline for the attest engagement reports. The new deadlines are January 31st of 2022 and June 1st of 2022, respectively. Finally, EPA is extending the attest engagement reports deadline for the 2021 compliance year to September 1st of 2022. Following the announcement, Growth Energy CEO Emily Score stated her organization is disappointed in the decision to agree to the deadline extension request by refiners. Score says refiners using COVID-19 as a pretext to attack the renewable fuel standard is wrong, as biofuel producers were among the hardest hit by COVID-19. Also here on American Ag Today, Farm Bureau Chief Economist John Newton is joining the Senate Agriculture Committee staff. Newton will serve as Chief Economist for the ranking member John Boozman, an Arkansas Republican. Boozman announced the appointment of 15 staff members this week. The senator says, "I'm excited to move forward with this accomplished team." AFBF President Zippy Duvall says, "Although I am sorry to see John go, I am also pleased to know he will serve in such an important role." Before joining AFBF, he served as a chief economist for the National Milk Producers Federation. Newton holds a doctorate in agricultural economics and master's degrees in macroeconomics and agricultural economics, all obtained at Ohio State University. Boozman also added Pam Miller as a senior professional staff member. Miller previously served as the administrator of USDA's Food and Nutrition Service. And Martha Scott Poindexter returns to the committee as staff director for the Republican side. She had previously led the committee staff from 2005 to 2010. And Organic Valley is partnering with Clean Energy Credit Union to launch the Powering the Good Loan Fund. The fund seeks to provide the best loan terms for farmers seeking to reduce their reliance on fossil fuels with renewable energy and efficiencies. Now, Organic Valley says the program is the first of its kind for both cooperatives, pioneering a unique clean energy loan fund for over 1,700 farmers across the country. To accelerate energy improvements, Organic Valley and Clean Energy Credit Union will roll out a $1 million fund with plans to expand. As the nation's largest organic farmer-owned cooperative, Organic Valley pulls carbon out of the air through regenerative practices like rotational grazing, while also working to reduce carbon emitted wherever possible. Bob Kirchhoff, Organic Valley CEO, says, quote, "We are providing farmers a means to reduce their energy costs and become more self-sufficient and sustainable." He says farmers who participate will contribute to a healthy, regenerative future for the next generation. And thank you once again for listening to another edition of American Ag Today. Reminder, USDA Report Day. Those reports come out at 11 a.m. Central Time. You've been listening to American Ag Today. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a great rest of your day.